Hello. I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Shabbat Parshat Tazria Metzora, which is the Parsha we read here in Israel. In Chutz La'aretz, they are going to read Parshat Shmini. I'll talk about that. Today is Yom HaShoah, Yom HaZikaron LaShoah VeLaGvura, Holocaust, and we'll talk about Gvura also. Yom HaShoah is the way it's usually referred to, and I will talk about the longer name and why it's there. And no introductory song, it's Yom HaShoah, it's Sfirat HaOmer, and no Zari, Zira, whatever her name is, doing voice synthesizing. Not that it's anyone else's fault but mine, but I am on an extremely tight schedule, tighter than usual because of extra stuff I had to do this morning. So let's get right down to it. We'll start with Tehillim, Kuf Kaf Lamed, Psalm 121. Shir Lama Alot, Esa Einai El Heharim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai, Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al Yitein Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum V'lo Yishan, Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomrecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yeminecha. Yomam Hashemesh Lo Yakeka V'yoreach Balayla. Adonai Yishmor Tzeisecha V'uvoecha, Me'ata V'yad Olam. Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael, Hanatunim Batzara V'ashivya, Ha'omedim Ben Bayam, Uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara l'yirvacha u'meyafela l'ora u'mishibud l'gu'ula hashtar ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. Before we get into everything else, I just said something in the end of the tefillah which reminded me of something that I discussed over Pesach. So let me share that with you. Bizman kariv ends with a V sound, V as in Victor, and the next word, Vinomar Amen, starts with a V sound. Even though they're produced by two different letters, and even though the Vav is originally a W, we pronounce the Vet, a Bet without a dot, and the Vav like the English letter V. When a word ends with that letter, and the next word begins with that letter, you have a potential blending situation, which is not proper, and that would be to swallow one of the V's. So, Bizman Kariv Vinomar, I lost one. You need to say, Bizman Kariv, pause, Vinomar Omein, especially since there's actually a comma there, but even if there wasn't, you have to pause. It is a common pitfall for Torah readers, and I guess for daveners also, to blend the last letter of one word with the first letter of the next word if they are the same. So that's one of the points that I often make about in the column that we call Towards Better Davening and Torah Reading. So since I had just said that, and if you heard me pause, let's make that the first item, and I'll get on to the second item. I'll give you a quick, hopefully, overview of the situation. There are 54 parshiot, sedras, weekly portions in the Torah. That, I don't know where it came from, but there are 54 weekly portions. We, all over the world and in Israel, read the Torah in a yearly cycle. That was not always the case. But reading it in a yearly cycle means we begin the Shabbat after Simchat Torah. Actually, on Simchat Torah, we're already reading the first part of Bereshit. And we go around the whole year till Vizot HaBracha is the reading on Simchas Torah morning. And the cycle is complete. The little problem in the cycle is that we sometimes have fewer Shabbatot and sometimes more. In fact, the number of Shabbatot in a given year ranges from 50 to 55, of which one is always in Pesach, which means we don't read a weekly Sedra then. One is always during Sukkot, which means we don't read a weekly Sedra there. Sometimes Rosh Hashanah begins on Shabbat, and we don't read a weekly Sedra then. Sometimes, not in the same year, Yom Kippur is on Shabbat. In our calendar in Israel, Shavuot can never be on Shabbat. And in Chutz La'aretz, Shavuot can be Friday Shabbos. So then in Chutz La'aretz, they won't read a weekly portion. And like this year, we had Pesach from Shabbat to Friday. So on the first day of Pesach, we did not read Parsha Shavua. But by the time the following Shabbat rolled around, even though you couldn't tell by what you were eating, we already were finished with Pesach, and we had a regular Shabbat. So we resumed reading Parshat Shavua last Shabbat with Parshat Shemini. That puts us out of sync with Chutz La'aretz, because this week in Chutz La'aretz they read Shemini, and we read Tazria Metzora, as I mentioned earlier. This stays until we get to the double portion of Bahar Bechukotai. In Chutz La'aretz, they are read combined. In Israel, they are split into two Shabbatot, so that when we read Bechukotai by itself, the rest of the world is reading Bahar Bechukotai, and the following week, Bamidbar, which is Erev Shavuot, we're all reading the same thing again. We have 6 weeks that we have different Torah reading. The situation next year, with the same schedule for Pesach, Friday night Seder, in Chutz La'aretz, two Seders, Friday night and Saturday night, and the Shabbat at the end of Pesach in Chutz La'aretz is already a regular Shabbat for us. So we then, next year, will read Acharei, while Chutz La'aretz celebrates the eighth day of Pesach with its special Torah reading. And then the following week, we're up to Kedoshim, and they do Acharei, and it stays out of sync for 15 weeks. That's a very long period. Until the first available double Sedra that we can split, which is Matot Maseh, significantly later. The other situation, which happens to be the following year, is when Shavuot is Friday in Israel. We resume reading Parshat Shavua the day after. In Chutz La'aretz, they celebrate and read Torah reading for the second day of Shavuot, and we go off out of sync again. The next scheduled double portion, only on this situation, is Chukat Balak, and we split it. And in Chutz La'aretz it's read together, so by Parshat Pinchas, we're back in sync. Also a six-week period. That's the whole story. I said it very fast now, relatively so, but you can look at it in the hard copy of Torah Tidbits or online. I introduced the Sedra summary with this full explanation as to the out-of-sync situation for Torah reading. And what I didn't say now in the beginning should be obvious by now the way I'm talking, is that there are seven pairs of Sedras that sometimes combine and sometimes separate all over the world. These ones that I describe are ones that we split here in Israel, and in Chutz La'aretz they read combined. But there are slightly different reasons for different doubles, and it works out that everybody gets to finish the Torah on Simchat Torah and begin right away with the beginning of Bereshit. Okay. Next, Yom HaShoah. Holocaust Memorial Day. Now, to skip to a totally different thing, the world has a Holocaust Memorial Day, or something like that, for the millions and millions of people, including Jews, including Catholics, including Christians, including many other groups that were killed during the Holocaust. And it's at the end of January. I don't remember the exact date, but that is not something of our making. When the first leaders of the new state of Israel faced the issue of Holocaust Memorial, there were two dates already existent on the extant on the calendar that were candidates. One was Tisha B'Av, and in fact, on Tisha B'Av, when we officially mourn the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, we also add, as many keynote booklets contain, a kina or two for the victims of the Shoah, for the Shoah situation, the Holocaust situation, as well as other tragedies that occurred in the past. And Tisha B'Av is not only for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, but it's also a memorial to the sin of the spies, and it's natural to add significance to a date rather than create a new date. The other candidate, which also now is a Holocaust Memorial Day, is another existing fast, namely the 10th of Tevet, Asara B'Tevet. Here in Israel, it is referred to as Yom Kaddish Klali, a Kaddish, general Kaddish day, for the victims of the Shoah who have no name and no family and no descendants and no one who knows of their existence. And that could be somewhere in the vicinity of 3 million Jews who perished, not like the other 3 million who have grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, grandnieces, grandnephews, etc. Elderly brothers, sisters, everybody has his own story. And the ones who have no one to say Kaddish for, Asara B'Tevet, and we also don't know the date of a Yahrzeit, of when they perished. So Tisha B'Av and Asara B'Tevet do double duty, one in the summer and one in the winter, for that aspect of Holocaust Memorial. Now we get to a broader population, namely the representatives of the entire population of the State of Israel, including religious and traditional and what is called secular Jews, although more and more I'm discovering that that's a very tiny part of the non-observant. Many non-observant are traditional or knowledgeable or somehow connected. Let me digress for a moment. I hope I get back on track with a story which I might have told in the past. Back in my basic training here in Israel, back in 1986, summer, the first morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, the 23 guys in my Shlav Bet, which means guys in their 30s. Today they don't bother with old people like that, but we had what was known as the second level of drafting. So I had a kita of 23 guys, 9 of whom were dati, religious, and the others were not. So 5 o'clock in the morning, on the first morning, the mefaked, the commander, says to us, gives us some orders of the day, and then he says, datiim, religious people, to the shul, to the synagogue, and secular Jews, come with me. Okay, during the day, we had more than a minion because there were two other kitot in the pluga. During the day, one of the guys in my unit, who I didn't know well yet, because it was only our first day together, although they came to me as one of the religious people and the oldest of the group. I did basic training at 37. And he says to me in anguish, he said, he, referring to the commander, called me a chiloni, a secular Jew. I'm not a secular Jew. I don't daven every day, but I keep some semblance of Shabbat, and I do other things, but I'm not secular. I'm not a chiloni. He was very upset. I said, okay, let me see what I could do. I went to the mefaked later in the day and told him what happened. Next morning, 5 o'clock, he finishes giving the orders of the day and then says in Hebrew, those who daven in Beit Knesset go to the Beit Knesset, and those who don't daven in the Beit Knesset come with me. So in one day or less, we broke the barrier between religious and non-religious into a much softer dividing line, those who daven in shul and those who don't. And that was the tone that was set the whole time. But as I said, I digress. But the population includes a whole wide range of people. Now, it is my perception, this could be applying my own thinking, it could be that I heard it from other people, it could be I read it someplace and I don't know. So I am sharing it with you with a question mark. I suspect that the younger element of the original leaders of the State of Israel were embarrassed by the Shoah, by the Holocaust. They perceived, when I say they, I don't mean every single person, but there was a general perception that Jews in that period of the mid-40s, beginning of the 40s, first half of the 40s, that they went like passive lambs to their slaughter, and they should have resisted, even if it risked their lives. And there was, I suspect, and still see it, an embarrassment. An embarrassment which manifested itself in, but we are going to be different because we have our own state and we have our own army and we have armaments and we have tanks and we have airplanes and they're getting more and more sophisticated and missiles, etc. And we will never be as passive sheep again. The second manifestation was their choice of the 27th of Nisan for Yom HaZikaron LaShoah VeLaGevura. That was the anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which is perceived, again, by certain part of the population as the display of courage and resistance in the face of overwhelming odds that some people would have hoped would have been the norm rather than the exception. So even though most people call today Yom HaShoah, the Yom HaZikaron LaShoah VeLaGevura adds to the Holocaust, which has that negative aura in the minds of some people. And when I say young people from 1950, today it's the same thing. As you get older, you understand things more, or you understand what you don't understand, or at least you know what you don't understand. But when you're younger, you think you're capable of understanding everything. So even though there was an objection from the religious Zionists that during Nisan, there shouldn't be this kind of negative memorial. We do say Yisker, of course, on the last day of Pesach. But basically, the month of Nisan, we don't say Tachanun, and it's a festive kind of month. Mishenichnas Adar marbim besimcha, when Adar enters, you increase in joy, according to Rashi, covers Adar and Nisan. So, it stayed. Yom HaShoah is not a fast day because it was in Nisan. It might have been otherwise. And is Holocaust Memorial Day. The day has no intrinsic religious feature to it. It's more of an internal, psychological, and spiritual day for introspection. When the siren went off this morning at 10 o'clock, as it always does on Yom HaShoah, you watch buses and cars come to a halt, drivers getting out of their vehicles. I'm getting choked up. To stand at attention for that 1 or 2 minute siren, and then the day continues. Last night at 7 o'clock in the evening, when it was still daytime, everything started closing up. All eateries, restaurants, food stores, every store. I can't say every, but practically every store that I saw closed around 7 o'clock and remained closed at night. This morning, even though it's still Yom HaShoah, the makolet and the supermarkets and the restaurants were open again. But it is a special thing when religious and secular and non-religious and not yet observant, however you want to call them, can join together, because the victims of the Shoah were Jews, not because they davened in shul, and not because they wore tallis and tefillin, and not because they kept Shabbat or learned Torah or observed Torah, only because they were Jewish. And therefore, remembering them should be done by every Jew just because he's Jewish. Religious people, non-religious people, not yet observant people, fine. I don't want to discuss now the anti-state fringe of the, I hate the term, ultra-religious community. Not everybody, but there is a strong element here that rejects anything from the, quote, secular state of Israel. But I'm talking about people with, as the expression goes, eyes in their head, who realize the importance of this kind of a day. One of my daughters called me this morning, and she said, I want to ask you a question. I put it off till tonight when I'll see her. How do young people in the United States who do not have parents or grandparents that were survived the Holocaust to tell them stories, how do they relate to Yom HaShoah? It's a good question. I'm not going to get into it now, but I hope to have a serious talk with my daughter tonight as well. But that's the story. I want to share one more thing. It's a story that I've read in the past on Yom HaShoah. I will relate it with a little anecdotal material. And to me, this answers the question better than the Warsaw Ghetto uprising with rifles, of where was the courage and strength of the Jewish people during the Shoah. One does not negate the other. Rabbi Ephraim Oshri, Zichrono Livracha, died not too long ago in his 90s, a survivor and a former rabbi in the ghetto in Kovno. He wrote a monumental work of questions and answers, halachic questions and answers, that he was asked during his tenure in the ghetto. And the answers, they were in Hebrew, but they were excerpted in one volume in English, Responsa from the Holocaust. This is not the only book of its type, but this is the one that I am most familiar with. And you don't just get a cold question and an answer, but you get the background to the question. One of the questions came to my mind this year again over Pesach, when I saw the tremendous quantity of matzah. I was in a hotel at the Dead Sea for Pesach, And I didn't get a chance to ask the kitchen people how many kilo of matzah. But it was an amazing abundance of matzah and matzah products. That's background for thinking of a man named Goldkorn. I don't remember his first name, and I don't have the book in front of me, who ended up in the ghetto in Kovno, became known to Rav Oshry, and was working outside the ghetto with a work permit that was issued to him. And he took it upon himself to smuggle a small quantity of flour into the ghetto, which was then stored in a dry container in a dry place, hopefully building up a stock of flour so that they would be able to bake matzo for the mitzvah of eating matzah on Pesach. He had accumulated the quantity necessary for 100 portions of matzah, which means 100 Jews would be able to fulfill the matzah of Pesach in the Kovno ghetto in that particular year. His last time in to the ghetto, he was caught with a small quantity of flour on his person, and since no food was allowed in, he was beaten mercilessly to within an inch of his life, broken bones, lost all of his teeth from repeated kicks in the mouth, and survived, not for long. He perished subsequently. Hashem Yikom Damo. He went to the rabbi with a question. First, I'll tell you what he didn't ask the rabbi. How can God let this happen to me when I was risking my life every day to smuggle flour in to make a mitzvah to you, God? He didn't ask that. That would be the question I would think he would ask. He didn't. This was his question. He says, I come from a Hasidic family, and we do not use matzah shruya, also known as gebrucht, in English, soaked matzah, on Pesach. Because of the last beating that I received, I am not capable of chewing matzah and swallowing it. How can I fulfill this mitzvah? The Rav, very sensitive to the question, convened a Beit Din, a technical rabbinic court, and underwent the process called Hatarat Nedarim, nullification of vows, since repeated following of a custom that you inherit in your family is the equivalent of a vow. And he nullified, this Beit Din, nullified the vow, and based on that nullification, Rav Oshry permitted him to take a portion of matzah, soak it in water, grind it up, pulverize it, and spoon eat this soft mush, l'shem, for the sake of the mitzvah of matzah. Over the last 10, 15 years maybe that I have this book, I have reread this Shaila and Tshuva at least a dozen times, most of which was in public. And every single time, I cry, I marvel at the spiritual courage of not just Goldhorn, again, I don't remember his name, I'm sorry, but of many, many, many people, Jews, in the Shoah, who, while they were taking physical beatings and ultimately losing their lives, maintained a courage
and strength of spirit, which is unbelievable. And here we are sitting with tons of matzah available, eating to our heart's delight, joyously celebrating the mitzvah. And this is why we are able to do it. I feel like Yosef in the story where he was in dialogue with Yehuda and he had to run out of the room before he burst into tears in front of his brothers, wasn't ready to reveal himself, washed his face and came back in. I didn't do that. I'm here with tears still running down my cheek. But hopefully, after a few deep breaths, I'm able to continue. To me, that's the story of Yom HaShoah. And there are many, many stories like it. And there are probably 100 times as many stories that we don't even know. Make it 1,000. I listened on the radio last night to various survivors, people in their 80s, who each one had something to tell, a story to tell, and you just have to marvel. Because you, if you are as young as I am, which is not so young anymore, but post-Shoah, can only marvel without any kind of real understanding of what went on. Last night at the Israel Center, we had a woman, Miriam Litke, she was on a Kinder transport, and she spoke. And before she spoke, she took some pictures with her latest descendant, a great-great-grandson, named after her husband, who had not long ago passed away. 5 generations. And I said when I introduced her, I said the Nazis did not want this woman to live. And she did. The Nazis did not want her to have children. And she did. They didn't want her to have grandchildren, and she does. They didn't want her to have great-grandchildren, and she's around to get nachas from them. And they certainly didn't want her to have great-great-grandchildren. 5 generations. It's truly amazing. And this goes one after the other after the other. In partial answer to my daughter's question, or in partial addition to her question, every year that passes, more survivors die. The children of survivors, whose parents spoke to them, continue telling the stories, and it goes on and on with education. In Israel, I have no doubt that that will continue unabated. So on the internet yesterday that in England, and I'm aware that this in other countries as well, but in England, the Muslim population petitioned the government to remove Holocaust studies from the curriculum in public schools because it offends them, since they deny its existence. Imagine that. And imagine what will happen when a country gives into that, then where the memories will be. Okay. I don't have all that much time, but let's put a focus now on the upcoming. Let me, before that, give you a retrospect from Pesach. I had opportunity to speak in public over Pesach. And one of the themes that I had, which I also wrote about in Torah Tidbits this week, was what I call the split personality of Pesach. Pesach is there because it commemorates and celebrates the Exodus from Egypt. We went down to Egypt as a small family. We grew to a large multitude, and we emerged as a potential nation, which 7 weeks later stood at the foot of Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, to receive the Torah and to enter into an eternal covenant with God with the Torah. That's the essential celebration of Pesach. But now, when you take a look in the Haggadah itself, as much as there is about Yetziat Mitzrayim and what happened in Egypt and how we got out and the plagues, etc., etc., there are a few things that go well beyond the actual Pesach story. Take, for example, the Dayenu song. Very popular, a lot of fun. People sing it in different ways. Basically, the beginning of Dayenu discusses coming out of Egypt and then crossing the sea, which happened at the end of our Pesach, but was a week after they came out of Egypt. And then continues with being in the wilderness and having our needs taken care of by God for 40 years of wandering and receiving the Mun and receiving the Shabbat and coming to Har Sinai and receiving the Torah, being taken into Eretz Yisrael and having the Beit HaMikdash built. A critical look at this says, whoa, wait a minute, nice poem, nice song, but you went way beyond Pesach. And the answer is no, it doesn't. Because Pesach would be remiss, if I could personalize Pesach, in not looking to the future and pointing us in the direction of the future to what we refer to as the Geula Shlema, the complete redemption, because Pesach just started the ball rolling. It was a big ball. It gets its status, its very high status, and everything points to Zecher Liyetziat Mitzrayim. Many mitzvot point that way. Every holiday points that way. Every Shabbat points that way. Every time we say Kriyat Shema twice a day, we're talking about God who took us out of Egypt. The Aseret HaDibrot speak of God who took you out of Egypt. Yet, it's not the whole story. And if you take a look not just at Dayenu, but one other example, at the Bracha of Geula, at the end of Magid section, before we get into Motzi Matzah, Moreh Korech, and Shulchan Aruch, we say a Bracha of Geula. This is after the first two passages of Hallel, the second one being Betzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim, with the Jews coming out of Egypt. The Bracha of Geula says, basically, thank you, God, for taking us out of Egypt and bringing us to this day where we're sitting with matzah and maror and celebrating Pesach. May you also bring us to other occasions in the future where we will be able to bring korbanot in your Beit HaMikdash. And the focus becomes not just the past and the present at the Seder table, but the future to the Geula Shlema. A fifth cup of wine is filled, calling it Koshel Eliyahu, and it points to the future. Lashona Habab Yerushalayim Habnuya. On that note, let me tell you that the State of Israel, the chief rabbinate over the years, has taken an aspect of Pesach and applied it to Yom HaAtzma'ut, which is coming up next Thursday, even though the 5th of Iyar is Friday. Yom HaAtzma'ut is preponed whenever the date falls on Friday or Shabbat. This avoids desecration of the Shabbat in preparation of the various ceremonies around the country. And I want to make a point here also. The the government could have said a long time ago, okay, religious Jews, you observe whatever day you want. You say Hallel when you want. You do this and that and the other thing. We will govern the national celebration the way we want it. They didn't do that. They said we are one nation, and we will all observe Yom HaSmaut together. We don't all observe it the same way. There are people whose focus of Yom HaSmaut is a barbecue. Ironically called in Israel a mangal, which isn't even a Hebrew word. It's a Turkish word that was borrowed for a grill. The proper Hebrew word, I've never heard anyone use it, is matzleh, mem tzadi lamed hey. Everyone knows what a mangal is. Everyone knows what these blow-up, squeaky, blue-and-white hammers and baseball bats and other things that people bop each other with. But then there are su'udot mitzvah and hodayah, meals of thanks to God for the establishment of the State of Israel. There is Hallel in the davening, the Pesukei de Zimra of Shabbat and Yom Tov, a borrowed reading from the Haftorah of the last day in Chutz La'aretz, which I told you before, focuses on the Geula Shlema, the complete redemption. We don't have a Torah reading on the eighth day of Pesach, because we don't have an eighth day, but somebody very intelligently, cleverly, took that Haftorah and made it a reading in the prophets, without brachot mostly, on Yom HaAtzmaut, because it points to the Geula Shlema. The summary of what I wanted to say, and I've said it many times already, about the healthy attitude towards Yom HaAtzmaut. It is not what many secular Zionists think, the realization of the age-old dream of Jews throughout the centuries. It isn't. It's the beginning, or a major step. It's not what anti-state and anti-Zionists of the religious type say. It has no religious significance at all. And why would you think of even saying thank you to God for something so secular? Equally wrong, maybe worse. The healthy perspective is that we thank God for milestones that are significant, and we hope and pray at the same time for the continuation. The official greeting of Yom HaAtzmaut is Moadim L'Simcha, Happy Holiday, L'Geula Shlema, towards the final redemption, the complete redemption. That's what Yom HaAtzmaut is. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, next week, I will try to record my show on Wednesday so that it will be available from Thursday, which is Yom HaAtzmaut. I doubt my schedule on Thursday will give me time to record the show, because my family ends up not only davening well, we have a beautiful minyan here, both at night in the Tachana Rishona, the first train station, a big, big thing with a concert, and then Thursday morning we have a beautiful davening here with a couple of special Divrei Torah, and then we go to one of our children for a mangal, a barbecue. So that's the story. So for now, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Did not mention the Shabbos. We bench Rosh Chodesh, Iyar, which is Sunday and Monday. So Chodesh Tov. And Moadim L'Simcha L'Geula Shlema for the upcoming Yom HaAtzmaut, whether or not I do a show next week. Also a reminder to count the Omer. And that means even if you're not counting with a bracha because you haven't been counting continuous, there is still a school of thought that considers it a mitzvah every single day to count. On ttidbits.com, you click on the Omer calendar, and there's a nice chart to remind you about counting. And that's about it, except for my favorite word, L'Hishtamea.